So hello and welcome. My name is Steve Pugh. This is the first growth strategy podcast since December. Being honest, and I always kind of share some of the journeys that I had an app to launch and lots of other stuff to kind of get done, which is now done. It's been live for a few weeks, which is going really good. And the Roadmap MBA, our mission is to make business education accessible in, well, around the world, but we're in 51 countries now as well. But I've been mega keen to basically kick off the podcast again. And what I love to do is share the story of really interesting people that I've come across with different networking groups or different people, and almost help share and celebrate their stories. So Lepora, I was invited to something called a V2I, so it's Veterans to Industry event, which is, I guess it's based in the US. I dialed in on a Saturday night here in the UK. But it was just, what I loved was hearing stories of really great people. And within the networking event, they talked about the stories of veteran-owned businesses and families of veterans. And, you know, there was a whole ecosystem that is a civilian based in England I haven't necessarily been exposed to. But actually just listening to all these stories was fascinating. It was brilliant. And again, there's a lot of cultural differences between the UK and the US that you may not think there is, but they're very subtle. And basically when I wanted to kick off the podcast again, I've reached out to a few different people. Lepora was one of them. And then if you join us for the next 40 or so minutes, hopefully she can share her journey. But if you have any questions, you can get in touch in the chat. And these all get clipped up on going to YouTube as well. So you can tell this is the first one I've done since December because I pressed the wrong button on my keyboard, which nobody else will know, but I know. But anyway, so how are you? How's your Thursday going?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little bit congested, but other than that, I'm great. And I'm so glad to be here. Thank you again, Steve, for having me.
No, cool. And where are you dialing in from?
New Jersey, United States, New Jersey.
No, it's cool. It's funny just because obviously I'm in England, but it's always cooler when someone's in America. For us, it's a big deal. I think it's a cultural thing that you grow up. And New York is actually my favorite city. I know New Jersey is different, but I love that part of the world. And I was in California last year. And I think especially with the media and different things is that people around the world are almost groomed. Hollywood is America's best tourist agency because you just see this thing on every TV show, every whatever. And I think what's always been quite funny is that there are very close similarities between the UK and the US, but also there's very subtle kind of differences. And it's just at the event, which was now 2 weeks ago, I think it might have been 3 weeks. But I loved your story that you kind of shared and that kind of thing. Would you be happy to give a quick introduction to yourself, your background, and where you're from?
Sure, absolutely. So hello, everyone. My name is Lepora. I consider myself a career confidence whisperer. And the reason for that is I like to help people within their careers, whether they are looking to move into a new position or looking to make the most of the position that they have currently, by helping them to highlight something I refer to as self-worth and being able to handle rejection. And I feel like the tools of both of those things really help people to build their confidence and utilize that in the workplace. I do inspirational speaking. I'm also a coach, and I recently published a book last year called Bottom of the Food Chain. And so with all of those things together, I use that in order to be able to help the people that I work with. And I absolutely enjoy what I do.
No, cool. Because one of the things I always find interesting, especially when you have your own business, mm-hmm. you are in complete control over what you do, what you say, who you speak to, who you give a platform to. And one of the things that really kind of gets me is that I have my own viewpoint on the world, and I've traveled around the world, and I only know what I know from my perspective, growing up in England as a white man. And part of the reason on our channel, we have lots of different presenters that could be Nigerian or South African and all over the world. But the idea is it's how different people have different lived experiences, but also like career confidence is something that, say, I personally have never struggled with, but that could be a lot to do with me, my personality, my background. And it's almost where would you be happy to share why you think it's needed, where it comes from, why people don't always have the confidence that maybe some other people have?
Yes, absolutely. So I really do feel like a lot of it is based on past experiences. So when I talk about rejection, one of the things that I notice in the people that I work with is a lot of time the current their current state is they don't even realize that a lot of the choices that they make are based on rejection, because it's really, really subtle. Like, rejection can be super sneaky. But as we start to get into conversations, we find out that they faced some type of rejection in the past that's been career related, whether it's been sharing an opinion in the meeting mm-hmm. and they were shut down, mm-hmm. whether it's been applying to previous jobs and they were told that they were overqualified or underqualified, whether it is just anything in the workplace and you're hearing no, 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 consistently due to whatever factors. This is actually something that I've dealt with personally. And so that's why I'm so much of a big proponent in helping people to excel and to move past it, because I know how much of an effect it can be on individuals. And actually, it was probably in 2019 when I really, really just started to come into the whole sense of understanding my value, regardless of of my position, regardless of my title, even regardless of what I look like, that I had something to bring to that table. And since then, I've just been like, hey, let's go out and help as many other people as I can who may be able to benefit from it.
Because that was one of the things that genuinely kind of shocked me, is that I've always had huge respect for people in the military. But I was almost an observer on that call. It was a lady called Dixie that invited me to join because she thought there could be a good link there. And it was, I've massive respect for people in the military. But on the call, you had lots of different people because there was work groups and different speakers who in terms of self-worth, self-esteem, I put them there just from what they've done, what they've achieved and the discipline. And that. But they themselves didn't necessarily feel that way. And it was what I thought was really fascinating was almost there seemed to be, I guess it's the unknown, but a fear of civilian world, the business world, that kind of thing. I guess it's because it's unknown. When I put in the chat during one of the talks, ironically, almost every person that was on that call is more powerful and has more skill set and the drive and the determination and the discipline to just annihilate everyone else. But it's almost, it's the classic thing. Have you ever seen when you have like elephants who were shown in the circus and they're held in the ground by a tiny peg? And it's not that the elephant isn't strong enough to do it. They just mentally think, I'm stuck. And it was that kind of thing. If I was trying to get across, almost all of them, you would just destroy almost everyone. You know, it's having that confidence to just go out there and smash it and just do the right things. And where do you think that comes from, just in terms of military veterans going back into, I guess, the transition?
It's because of what they know. So I'm a military spouse. My husband has been in for, almost 21 years now. Wow. And I've been a military spouse for almost 15 years. And I've, a part of my job in the past, and even now, honestly, I work with active duty service members or veterans who they know what they know for so long. And so much is tied to your position, to your title, as far as what you have the authority to do. And so now you're telling someone after a certain amount of time, this is the way you have to do it. This is how you bring value. Now you're telling them, now you choose. That's complete opposite of what they are used to. And so when you give someone that freedom to choose and the freedom to determine what value they bring to the table after X amount of years of being told otherwise, like, that is a huge change. And so it's going to take a process of them almost reconfiguring how they process that. And that's why you'll see some people, when they transition out, it's a lot less stressful because they've already started that process mentally of, okay, this is just one job. This is just part of me. This is not all of my identity. But if someone groups it as their entire identity, they're going to have a harder time transitioning because now they're going to lose that part, that identity of themselves, if that's their whole identity, and that they have to figure out something different.
It was just, it's silly that sometimes when you get exposed to different groups and just different, I was amazed because some of the people on the call, and it was one of the other business owners, I forget the guy's name, said about how nobody had given him a job. So he started his own business.
Oh, yes.
And what blew my mind was a case of, like, I would give this guy a job in a second. Like, virtually everyone on the call was just mega employable. But it's just, I guess it's the mindset, it's the different markets, the skill sets, that kind of thing. But anyway, so can I ask you, like, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Florida in the United States. It's like southern states. And but where I grew up in Florida, it's not really like the rest of Florida. When people think about Florida, it's like southern versus like Florida, like the island Florida. It's not really that. But yeah, it was my parents were pastors at our church, so grew up in a religious household, and went to high school and all that fun stuff. I guess, long story short, I mean, I don't know. That's, I appreciated all of my experiences that I had, but I learned more honestly by looking back at those experiences than when I was there in the moment. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it's almost like I look at it and I'm like, oh yeah, that was a good lesson.
I didn't necessarily enjoy school. I think one of the things that really got me was that I was always short-sighted, but it was never picked up until I was like 18. But the irony was that I would sit at the back of the class because that's where the cool kids would sit. But then I couldn't actually see the board, because actually I'm old enough that we used to teach on blackboards. Anyway, that sounds crazy in 2023, but it was literally a blackboard and chalk regardless. And but I would be disruptive because I couldn't really engage. And I was always good at the stuff, but I always had a chip on my shoulder that actually, in some ways, I always felt that I underperformed. You know, so I knew I had ability, but I didn't get straight A's, and I didn't go on to be a doctor, and I didn't do stuff. And when I look back, I always kind of regretted different things. But what it did do, ironically, from my upbringing, you know, my mom worked multiple jobs to raise two boys and different things, it was that work ethic almost gave me the fire to really kind of, now that I do my own thing, almost it's a blessing, it's a superpower that I have now that actually I didn't like or appreciate at the time. And actually, you won't be able to say it, but either, do you know who David Goggins is? He's a motivational speaker.
He did, yes.
So I've assigned David Goggins' book on my wall, but he talks about how he went through a lot of adversity in his earlier years, but actually that now is really, it's his superpower, it's his strength that he uses to inspire other people. And I just love to see, especially for business owners, often there are certain kind of key traits and things which actually not everyone goes on to be independent and launch a business like you have. And often it's the kind of common themes and that kind of thing as well. So talk me through did you go to school, university, college?
Yes, I went to school and university. High school was really rough for me. I guess you were sitting with the cool kids. I was sitting by myself. That's like probably the best way to think about it. Because I was a loner. I was a loner in high school, but I learned a lot. Like I said, it's more of that reflective learning than in the moment learning. For me, it was just always which again, this is why I'm so adamant about having that confidence, not really having the confidence to be able to speak up, to say anything, feeling like I had anything like worth to offer. I remember specifically one day I wore like this really bright orange, like you think this is bright orange, like it was like extremely bright orange. I'm talking about like neon orange, like sweatsuit. And that's probably dates me as well, because that was a cool outfit. And I was walking down the hallway and somebody bumps into me and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you. And that was literally the story of my life, because I'm like, you can't see me in this bright orange suit. Like, it's bright. But I always felt like people didn't see me. But when I moved into or shifted into college, university time, that was when everything changed. When I joined a speech and debate team, I felt like I found, it was actually theater and speech and debate. I found my people, I found my community, and I found how I brought that value, and the confidence just started flowing. So sometimes it just takes that finding, you know, what's going to work for you and putting those pieces together. And that's how it works out.
No, I think it's like Seth Godin would call it finding your tribe. It's when you find people that you either emotionally or physically or whichever relate to. That I was quite similar, that with, I was bullied at school because I didn't have branded trainers or clothing or whichever. And it was, and I always found that difficult, but I was always good at sports. So I kind of got away with it at high school. And then when I went to university, it was different because I was from what I guess you call a blue collar background, but it was almost, it was a working class background is what we call it here. But almost when I was at university with lots of different people from all different backgrounds, I felt out of my depth in many ways because I didn't relate to them in the same way. But ironically, that when you were in the classroom and we were all learning something new, you had all these different people from different angles coming together. But actually, we almost found common ground, if that makes sense. But it probably realistically took me until 22, 24 to maybe really feel myself as a developed adult human who thought, I think I actually developed quite late. And, you know, there's loads of different reasons why that could be. But I think those formative years when you are in different environments to, you know, join the debate team or whichever can make a huge difference. So then what did you study?
So for my undergrad, I studied organizational communications. And then for my master's, I studied public administration. It was science administration, but public administration was the focus of that. And I actually ended up doing public administration because that was when I really wanted to go back to school for my master's in communication or psychology, because my minor was in psychology. But I had just become a military spouse, and that was before like online schools was a thing. Back then, it really wasn't a thing. And there was one program they started rolling out, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is, I guess, close enough. So I went with public administration, and here I am.
No, cool. So then how did your career journey pan out? Because obviously you've gone from, I guess, school through to you now a business owner, you've written a book, you've done all this really kind of cool stuff. But what was that journey like for you?
Oh my gosh. So the journey was all over the place. Like there is no like linear direction, just because of from moving from country. Well, we went to Spain, and then we were here and then there, like different states. And it was just all over the place. Had kids, right? But somehow I was able to kind of keep my focus centered on career services. No matter what the position was, whether it was working at a nonprofit in workforce development, whether it was working in higher education and helping people to develop their confidence with public speaking, it at one point or another, it's always been tied to improvement, to learning and development, to just really helping people within their careers in one aspect or another. And I actually had a business back in 2016. I had started a business because I wasn't able to get employment at the time. And then I ended up closing it because it was conflicting with the job that I ended up getting, and then tried it again. And now this time I'm doing it with a little bit more strategy, a little bit more research. And I've enjoyed every step, even the moments where I feel like I'm failing, but I learned something from it later on.
I think that is really important because especially on social media nowadays, everyone pretends that it's easy and that you can get rich quick and they can 10x your results and do all this magical stuff. And it's almost where it's not, it's really hard. I know what I'm doing. I'm really good at it and I find it hard. And it's funny that when I started mine, I'm just into my third year of a 10-year plan. And I know that almost nothing's going to happen between now and year 8, but from 8 to 9, 10, then it'll take off. But it's that balance of where, you know, when you're trying to share your voice and empower other people, it's difficult because I've had people say to me, they felt that they were underperforming. Why is everyone else doing well and they're not? And again, it comes back to confidence. And I always find it funny that everyone wants to be seen. So everyone wants followers and likes and doing all this stuff. But often, especially on social media, what gets likes is often clickbait, attention grabbing stuff that almost it can be quite difficult to really figure out who's good, who actually knows what they're doing, who can I trust. And it's part of the reason why I like longer form content, because hopefully the course of 30-40 minutes, people will be able to get a feel for your background, your understanding, learning, development. But actually I think at the moment social media is still a bit attention grabby, as we're actually can almost see a reset coming where people resonate with clarity and truth and almost, you know, people's integrity. And I think I'm still waiting to see that shift, but I'm banking on it, because actually I've never gone the clickbait, attention grabby headline route,
right?
Which is often, I know it's going to affect me, that I'll get less views, but I think it's the right thing to do. And I just wondered for yourself that, you know, how have you found it since you've almost set back up, and what lessons did you learn from last time in that kind of process?
Yeah, so I'm 100% with you on the 10-year plan. It's because it's this is oh my gosh, it'll be 2 years in September for mine, and I'm like, okay, by year 10, it's gonna be amazing. I can see it. But so from first time to that I started a business to this time, oh my gosh, I've learned so much, but I won't share it all because I feel like we could talk the whole time about lessons learned.
That's fine.
One of the most important things that I learned was that, and I kind of talked about this a little bit at V2I or the Vets to Industry event, like there are different forms of having your own business. You have your freelancers, you have your small business owners, you have the entrepreneurs who are looking to build up so that they can get a buyout. And there's all of the combinations and in-betweens. And so the first time I started a business, I was overwhelmed with the idea of I need to make this work right now and this be my sole income or our families. Well, my husband was working too, but this needs to be, my contribution. This time it is more so, which I have done, if I need to get a part-time job here and there because the income for my business isn't working out, that's okay. If I need to pick up some freelance gigs here and there, it's okay because it's really about determining a structure. Like, even though I have in my mind what I want it to be, it may change a little bit, and that's okay. And also understanding that what works for some people may not work for others. One of the things that people used to always tell me to do, is don't do things, don't do too many things for free. Don't do too many things for free, especially speaking. And speaking is one of the part of my business. And I was listening for a long time, but because everybody was saying it. So if everybody's saying it must be right, right? Well, I did a couple of free speaking gigs, and it was maybe like 4 or 6 months later when I actually started getting paid opportunities from those free speaking gigs. And then when I started evaluating, I was like, you know what? It doesn't take me a long
It's
time
advertising, it's
to,
marketing, it's
yeah, yes, yeah. It doesn't take me a long time to come up with an idea to speak on. I know how to be engaging, and other people may struggle with this, but this is actually easier than coming up with
You
some
are good.
document.
But
Thank
I know
you.
your degree was in communications, but you speak very clearly, you're obviously very articulate, but you think through the answer, and that isn't true with
Thank you.
everyone. But it's true,
Yeah.
it's part of the reason why I asked. And it's that balance of where if you hadn't done the V2I 15 minutes, I would never have
Right.
discovered you. And then 20,000 other people could discover you. But it's that balance of where I've started to do this more, is that I'll get approached about stuff, and this is just this week. And I could easily just say no. Someone that wants a
Yes.
15-minute call, and I had one yesterday. I'm going to have one soon, but it's that kind of. I'm not going to say yes to everything, but you never
Right.
know what's going to lead to different things. And actually, it's having faith that you're doing the best you can. You've got the right intent with what you're trying to do. You're trying to do it honestly. That if an opportunity comes, that nobody knows. I watch the stock market. What's going to happen? What's go ups down?
Right.
But if you try your best. What will be, it will happen. But but this proves the fact that if you wouldn't have taken that gig, I wouldn't have discovered you, and then someone else could discover you. And it's, you never know.
Exactly. You never know. And so with that, it's a matter of even if everybody is saying don't do it or do it, you really have to do an evaluation for yourself and figure out what works best for you. And that's what I've been doing this time around, and it's made a huge difference, and how I operate. So yeah, I'm grateful for it.
No, it's cool.
Yeah.
But I think it's that balance of when. So I always encourage people, and I spoke to someone just at lunchtime who wants to start their own business. And I always say, if you can, do it whilst you're working so you've got some income, because it always takes longer than you think. And then even though a lot of my stuff, so I was a
Yeah.
management consultant, I was earning the money in consultancy and then spending it on the roadmap business. And then even
Yes.
now, I still do that now. And I've been going for 2 and a bit years, and I'm really good at this, but it means that I can invest properly in podcast equipment and do the right stuff that I could never do if I tried to make a living off just this. As where I think sometimes people have the
Exactly.
dream that they want to be a painter, but you can be a painter and sell your paintings, but you're an accountant in the daytime, and then gradually transition. Some people just jump out the plane, and then don't understand why they can't make $5,000 a month selling paintings.
Exactly. And you hear a lot of times, you were talking earlier about social media and like the almost like the instant gratification. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when people are out there selling like their process, they don't fill you in on the, well, before I got to the point where I was selling $5,000, I actually did a couple things for free, or mm-hmm. I did, you know, $5 here and there. And then I had that side other hustle in order to support that. You don't get that.
Yeah.
But this time, it really is about, we do a lot of surface level comparison on social media, and it's really important to go deeper than what you see initially and start having some conversations. And if anybody wants your, if you want your business to work, you have to have those conversations to go deeper and figure out what can you do differently and what can really work for you.
I must say, I do a live stream every Friday morning, and often it's just me talking in a room to myself, to a camera. You get the occasional comment. But I actually view it as practice, because in 10 years time, I could be the next Simon Sinek, and I just see it as practice. But I talk about all the things that go wrong, and you know, the amount of, we do drop-in classroom sessions, the amount of sessions I turn up to late at night and nobody turns up to, that's fine, because it's part of the journey. It's part of my path that one day, if it's a billion-dollar company, I'm going to look back at all these YouTube videos of when it was literally me on my own in the spare bedroom. But I do it because I love it. I don't do it to get paid. You know, yes, you want to make a profitable business, but it's that change in society, empowering people. You know, that's my mission, that actually I would do it for free. And the acid test that I had recently was that somebody approached me about a job, and it was a very, very well-paying job, like a lot. And I pulled out because I wouldn't be happy. I would prefer to do this and get paid no money at all, but work with different people and help different communities around the world, then get paid a lot more. But if I had to give it up, and I even said to a friend last night that if someone said to me, okay, Steve, I'll give you $1 million today, but you can't do this again for the rest of your life, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And it's
I'm
just,
with you on that.
So it's clear that you're really passionate about learning and development and, you know, helping support people. Why is that?
Oh, so specifically as it ties into the workplace or the workforce, and it's because I've worked at so many different places. And that's the one thing I see, not even in my personal experience, but with the people that I work with, whether in groups or individuals, and even research, like you can look at like just about any Gallup poll that talks about, retention rates or any other article that's studying like what keeps people, and professional development is what keeps people. The opportunity to have cross-functional learning opportunities is what keeps people. The other thing that's really that the workforce is really understanding right now is that we are humans. And it may sound like so obvious, but here's the thing, because we are humans, we have empathy, we have internal motivators, external motivators. There is some self-awareness that needs to happen there. There is some social awareness that needs to happen there. And so as they are starting to discover this, the learning and development opportunities are leaning more into teaching individuals how to execute those types of skills, how to develop them and how to share them. And that's why I'm so passionate about it, is because it makes a difference in a workplace where you feel comfortable working with your coworkers and your coworkers feel comfortable working with you, versus being in an environment where there's a huge lack in communication because there is no self-awareness there. There is no social awareness there. So I'm all about it. Like, let's do it.
Do you think it can be taught? Because what I find quite funny is that some of the companies that I work with, you have people that are very good at sales, say, or they could be the boss, they could be the director, but they're just terrible at people. They're just like awful. They don't care. They don't quite get it. They don't have any empathy. Can those people be made better? Or are some people just a lost cause that you...
Well, I wouldn't call it a lost cause, but I would say, sometimes it's personality based. Yeah. And you can't, I'm going to say you can't change personality. I feel like with the right tools, you can. But when it comes to learning and development in the sense of what can be offered in the workplace, sometimes people need more than that. And whether it's therapy, like sometimes you need to go to a counselor, you need to go to a therapist in order to get the additional support in addition to what you get with learning and development. Mm-hmm. So learning and development doesn't solve everything, but that it does bring up a point where if there is like a personality issue or something else that's going on there and they're not benefiting from learning and development, then that would then be perhaps an alert that additional support is needed for that person.
Okay. I had a chat just this morning with a senior executive in Scotland, and we find it funny that as you go through your career and you get more and more senior, arguably the biggest skill is the one thing you're never really taught is the people skills. It's just listening and getting people to understand and to trust you and tell you where they're at. And actually, that's so valuable that I think people genuinely underestimate it, that they think, oh, okay, you need to be an expert in finance and whichever. But actually just being someone that people like and trust and will talk to and building mm-hmm. that rapport is probably the most important skill that you'll ever need as an executive. And it's just, no, it's really interesting. Can I ask you about writing the book? Because this is sure. one of the... What's quite funny is that as you go through your career, you look at, you mentioned before about intrinsic and extrinsic motivators and things mm-hmm. that people want. And a lot of people would love to write a book. Can I ask you both, what is yours about? And then also, how did you go through the process of writing it, I guess, you know, from scratch to almost where you are now?
Yeah, so my book is called Bottom of the Food Chain, and it's a fresh perspective on how your career impact goes beyond your job title. And so with that long title, it really is about understanding that no matter what organizational ecosystem you find yourself in, and no matter what position, we each have a very valuable part to play in making it work. You can look at any system that has different cogs. And if one cog stops working, that is going to affect the rest. And it's the same thing with any organization. It can really limit that. And I think a lot of people, especially when they're in the bottom level roles mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. entry level roles, junior level, they think, well, because I'm in this role, what I'm doing isn't essential. Like no one will miss me if I don't do my job. But it is noted. Just because it isn't stated yeah. doesn't mean it's not noted. As far as the process, it was a fun process until it got to marketing. and I didn't think about marketing until the book was almost done. It could have been probably more enjoyable had I thought about marketing early on. But with writing the book, it was really just about finding a way to express what I had dealt with, to express what the individuals who I had spoken with, what they have dealt with, and put it on paper in a book that would have been helpful for me.
Yeah.
Can would have been an encouragement
your
for me.
Process. So almost because I know about six friends that are trying to write a book at the moment.
Yeah.
Did you like convince yourself to write 500 words a day, or how did you break it down
okay.
into chapters and you did it one at a time, or did you just build up bits and pieces over 5 years and then you kind of brought it together?
So for that process, it was, oh my gosh, what do you call the word? I don't know. Some people call it panster. So essentially I was all over the place. but some people like to do outlines. For me, it was mm-hmm. more like a spider web
yep.
where I started out with the core idea in the middle. And then I said, so what are different ways that I can support this core idea? And that core idea was value in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So I had those core ideas that stemmed from there. And then it was another circle in, okay, so how can I support that idea? So that was the initial process. And then it was a matter of writing it out. And I just wrote for the initial one. I didn't worry about necessarily how it was worded. I didn't necessarily worry about bringing in any additional stories. It was just getting it on paper. Mm-hmm. And then I went back and added in some stories mm-hmm. where I felt like maybe this is a bit of a lull here. And then the editing process is tedious, but going back and editing and getting beta readers to read mm-hmm. and see what they thought about it, see if the goal that I wanted was met or the interpretation was picked up on what I wanted to be interpreted as. and then write it again.
But it's so important. Because the other thing as well is that with working for yourself as you do, mm-hmm. it's why should people hire you against someone else? And just as a pure unit of social proof entity, authors are cool. And that likewise, what I always find quite funny is that if you go to a TED event or whichever, it almost doesn't matter what someone's backstory is. It's always author of this book, if that makes sense.
Right.
But my point being that actually when, you know, you're looking to raise awareness on your services, to get people to hire you for speaking gigs and different things, when you've got that to fall back on, it's a brilliant marketing tool that you can send it to people and you've got it on your website. There, you know, instantly your credibility is already here because you have something that not everyone does. And I think that's part of the reason why I like to people watch quite a lot. And there are certain things that people want almost as status signifiers. So like CEO, founder, you've got business owner, you've got TEDx speaker, author. But it's people, especially on LinkedIn, they like to collect their badges. But it is seen as a very cool, and it is because it's really difficult to do. Because ironically, the first book I ever tried to write was when I was doing my PhD. And I'm very into my photography stuff. And it was a bride's guide to wedding photography. So I was very good at taking photos, but I wanted to teach brides what to look for in venues, in photographers, in cameras, what makes a good photographer, and it was just, I put together the bones, but I just could never, I was too busy with other stuff. And there will be millions of people out there that have started, they've got the outline, but they've never, anyone that can actually execute to get something, anything across the line has done something really special, because 90% of people will never get to that point. But because it's, you know, something that everyone is interested in, I think it's cool.
And another thing as well, I guess I should add, is I was working a full-time job at the time when I started. It probably took me a year total, but I would wake up early. So if I had to be to work at, I think it was like 7:30 in the morning. So I would wake up at like 5 before the kids got up. And then I would also go to bed late. So after the kids were asleep, I would stay up and I would just type, because I couldn't get the thoughts out of my head at that point. So there does come a certain point where if you commit to it, then it will start to become easier, like as far as waking up early, staying up late, or just doing what you need to do to get it on paper.
Because I think the other thing which makes it even more impressive is the fact that you did all of this whilst working and with kids as well. I don't have kids. So actually, on weekends and evenings, I could kind of just do it. As well, with all of those extra distractions, it makes it harder. So again, even more respect, because actually it's really hard to do.
But it's rewarding.
Yeah. Is there anything that you would like to talk about or plug?
Oh,
you can plug the business.
You
can tell people about it. You can tell people where they can follow you.
Sure. I'll tell them where they can follow me. Cause like I said, marketing, I need help with that. I'm like the worst marketer. If people want to follow me, I'm Lapora Lindsay on all social media platforms. I primarily use LinkedIn, and then Facebook. And actually on Facebook, it's The Lapora Lindsay, because my private profile page is Lapora Lindsay. And then on Instagram, I don't really use Twitter and TikTok, but I have claimed my pages. So just Lapora Lindsay. And if they want to send me a message, same thing, they can email me, which is hello@laporalindsay.com. And then they can visit my website to find out a little bit more about me, which again is Lapora Lindsay. I like to keep it simple. So if you just Google me, you'll get all the contact information you need.
Can I ask you two questions before we kind of wrap up?
Yeah.
Is that cool? So this is always my favorite bit, and it's almost completely selfish because I get to speak to hundreds of people and learn from all their experience. Would you be happy to share what's the best piece of advice you've ever had?
Oh my gosh, there's so many different things, but the one thing I will share that's probably been the most helpful as of late is that people don't know what you know. And what they meant by that is that you can't just assume just because you give someone a little bit of information that they know what you need, that they know what you're implying or any of that. So be clear, be direct, and make your request known.
It's very good. I'd like almost riffing off that as well. It's the fact that not everyone will have your frame of reference. So you might know things that you've seen something in the media, or I pay a lot of attention to stock market trends and banks collapsing because we're looking at a venture capital raise this summer. But the issue is, so I'm trying to watch all of that. If I talk to my wife and she hasn't had any of the knowledge from the past week, her viewpoint might be completely different. And why do you want to give up? And why do you want to pull
exactly
out? And it's that balance of, and I've been guilty of this in the past, is where we've had an argument or disagreement with work or whichever, and it's your frames of reference are different. So you assume that they think you assume that they know what you know, but it's completely true. And I think it's that balance of, I think often people forget that we are all human, we are just animals, and we're all trying to do our best, and no one is perfect. People need time off, people have bad days. I think that's very cool. If you were to give advice to your younger self, so it could be you at school, you at college, even in 2016 when you launched your business first time, if you were to give advice to your younger self, what would it be?
Oh, do what scares you. 100%. Do what scares you, because that's so crazy. Because the two things that I've always been afraid of have been the keys to the success of my business. I've always been afraid of speaking out and speaking, like not public speaking, but just like speaking in general, speaking to people just really makes me nervous. Right. And I've always been afraid of like networking in person.
Okay.
But those two things, when I do them, even if I'm afraid, have been so helpful in promoting me forward. And I wonder, like, if my younger self knew that, where would I have been? So,
That's very cool. Well, I know how busy you are. But genuinely, thank you for your time today. This will all get clipped up and go onto YouTube, and I'll do a nice edited version and that kind of thing as well. But genuinely, thank you for your time today. It's a real pleasure. I've got massive respect for the whole veteran kind of community, but you stood out. And I might actually reach out to the other guys.
Thank you.
One had an apparel line and the other guy had a coffee company. But it was just really
cool.
I love people that do stuff and actually do something. I always hate people, and I think from my childhood, you always have people that will criticize, but they've never really put themselves in the arena to do something, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And it is so hard to do anything and execute, even something that seems quite small. So I always have massive respect for anyone that's kind of been on that journey. But no, Lapora, thank you so much for your time today. Please kind of keep in touch, and I guess I will speak to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Steve.
No worries,
have a great day. Bye.